Welcome to our innovation series. Today I'm speaking with Mike Wisner, the president of Incarnate Word Academy since the fall of 2019. Mike is a transformational leader who's been an enthusiastic supporter of Catholic education and an innovator in all of his roles in education and in the business sector. He served as the key consultant to St. Brendan's School and served as interim head of school during its discernment process that resulted in their adopting the classical Catholic education model. He's currently also consulting with St. Robert and William School as they transition to implementing a governing board and a president-principal model over the school that's supported by both St. Robert and William and John of the Cross parishes. And he does this in his spare time when he's serving as the outstanding president of Incarnate Word Academy in Parma Heights. Prior to his role at IWA, Mike was the vice president of marketing and mission for Ohio Catholic Federal Credit Union, where his market strategy, community outreach, public relations, and philanthropic efforts were creatively growing the organization as well as support for Catholic education. He served as a Catholic school teacher and administrator at Elyria Catholic High School, as well as adjunct professor of marketing and management at Tiffin University. Mike and his wife, Michelle, have three daughters and five grandchildren and belong to Our Lady of Peace Parish in Grafton. Thank you so much for being with us, Mike.
Frank, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Well, I hope you could start by sharing a little bit about your background and what drew you to leadership in Catholic education.
Sure. So as you mentioned, my career, I've bounced between business and education. So I started my career with a Fortune 500 company. I worked downtown. It was my dream job out of college. I carried a briefcase to work every day. I felt somewhat important, and I loved what I did. But I told my wife after about 6 years, I don't feel like I'm doing what I'm called to do. And I finished my MBA at Case Western and started teaching as an adjunct professor at my undergrad alma mater, Tiffin University, and did that, loved it, and then was approached about going there full-time and taking over their off-campus operations. And so I did that for 4 years, and I loved what I did, but there was still something missing. And I had the opportunity, I was approached by somebody at Elyria Catholic High School. My daughters were both at St. Jude. They were on track to go to EC. And they said, we're looking at trying to transform the school. And this was Andy Krakowiak at the time. He was the principal. And said, I'd like you to be, you know, consider being part of the team to do that. And I was intrigued. And what drew me to Catholic education, number one, is I am the product of public schools. So my wife and I both attended public schools K through 12. When it was time for us to find schools for our own daughters, I really wanted them to be in Catholic schools. I believe in my heart of hearts, Catholic education is probably one of the most important ministries we do as a church. To pass our faith on to the next generation is hugely important. And so when the opportunity came up to serve at Elyria Catholic High School, I jumped on it, and I have no regrets about that. It was a great experience, and from there, I went back into business, as you mentioned, at Ohio Catholic Federal Credit Union. And the beauty of that position, Frank, is it introduced me to Catholic schools across the state of Ohio. And I will be the first to admit my view of Catholic education was a little bit myopic in that it was limited to my time at Elyria Catholic High School. Serving at Ohio Catholic allowed me to go throughout the state at the elementary, high school, and even the college level to see the amazing work that was being done in our ministry. And I can't think of anything that better prepared me for the role of president at Incarnate Word Academy. And so, you know, my time at IWA, I was immediately drawn to the fact that it was an ordered school. The first person I met was Sister Rosemary Burke. And I knew within the first 10 minutes that this is where I want to be. And so I've been there the last 5.5 years. And as you've mentioned, I've done some consulting work as well. And it's a joy to be in the Ministry of Catholic Education.
Thank you for sharing that story. And let's talk about innovation, the reason for our series here. Innovation can be a bit of a buzzword that we hear thrown about a bit. What does innovation mean to you? What's your definition of innovation in Catholic education?
To me, innovation is really all about continuous improvement. It's about looking at the things that you do day in, day out, and taking the time to pause and reflect on them. being very mindful that there may be a better way to do something. And I'll just give you a quick example. My first year at Incarnate Word Academy, I met with some folks about our Spanish program because I had heard that our students were graduating from IWA, going on to prestigious high schools throughout the diocese. And after 9 years of taking Spanish at Incarnate Word Academy, would go into Spanish 1. And I'd hear the rare story where somebody would test out of Spanish 1. It was a big deal. And at the same time, we were running an etymology club in the morning and a Latin club. And my own opinion was every student should be introduced to etymology. You know, if we can work with our youngest learners to give them the basis and the foundation for the origin of words, to help them learn to decode words, to help them understand where language comes from, this is going to have a long-term impact on their vocabulary, on their ability to decode, on their ability to do well on future standardized tests. And the introduction of Latin is hugely important because we don't know what language our students will take in high school, so why not give them a foundation that is the foundation of all of those languages, which is Latin. And so we made the decision my first year that we were going to discontinue the Spanish program and bring etymology to pre-K through grade 4, introduce a world cultures course in grade 5, and Latin in grade 6 through 8. And this is just one small example of looking at something you've always done, asking yourself, why are we doing this? And then, you know, thinking about a different way to do it. And I will tell you, to this day, that is a decision that I am extremely happy about. And I love nothing more than walking into a pre-K class and see Jake Hallisker, one of the best teachers I've ever met, working with preschoolers who can't even read yet in most cases, and they're learning about words, the origin of words. And it's just it's so gratifying to see that, and the kids love it.
That is awesome. It's a testament to the great things that are going on at Incarnate Word Academy, which, speaking of, Incarnate Word Academy received the National Blue Ribbon Schools Award as an exemplary high-performing school in 2023. And since then, you've all been striving for excellence and continuous improvement, like pursuing the STEAM designation for 2024. How do you keep pushing the organization for growth and improvement after achieving success?
I have to give credit where credit is due. And, you know, the greatest thing that I've done in my time at Incarnate Word Academy is hire Stephanie Congelio as our principal. And we've put together a very strong administrative team. And Alexis Flynn, her assistant principal, Gabe Kessler, who's our director of advancement and admissions, Paul Natowski, who joined us as our director of finance. But really, Stephanie is the one on the academic level that drives this. And it comes, though, from the overriding spirit of the administrative team of the sense of continuous improvement. And with our students, all of us in education push for a growth mindset with our students. We want them to continue to grow, continue to challenge themselves. We as administrators are called to do the same. We as teachers, as educators, are called to demonstrate that to our students. And so the reason we keep pushing ourselves is because we know that the journey is never over. You're never done in becoming better, you know. And I think, to use a sports analogy, you know, I'm a huge Guardians fan, you know, and I look at Jose Ramirez, and you'll see him in the dugout, and he'll be looking at notes, and he'll be looking at note cards, and he has note cards on every pitcher, and he's always studying to try to get better. And this is somebody who's a perennial all-star. It's that same mindset that we have to bring to education. We have to always be thinking about how do we get better. And I do want to emphasize one thing. We're very proud that we are an award-winning school. You know, we've been a top workplace the last 3 years. We have the STEAM designation, the only school in the state of Ohio 2 years ago to be designated a STEAM school. That's elementary, high school, middle school, public, private. So we're proud of those things. You know, we have the military designation, the Purple Star. We don't do those things to get the award. We do those things to go through the process. And when you go through the process and you challenge yourself to get better, you can't help at the end to be a better institution. And so that, to me, the reason we don't rest is because we owe it to our students, we owe it to our school families to continue to look at ways that we can better serve our students. And just one quick example, for all the good that we do, you know, one of the things we're looking at are our grounds. And we admittedly underutilize our grounds. And so we're looking at ways, how can we bring programs like outdoor education to our own campus? You know, when we're looking at making investments in capital improvements, what are those things that, yes, we're doing very, very well, but what are those areas where we're not necessarily meeting the needs of the students or we can do better? And I think it, and this isn't just limited to education, every organization should always be asking itself, how can we do better? How can we improve upon what we're doing now? And that's the spirit in which we do our best to operate.
That is fantastic. I mean, that's the sort of continuous improvement that we aspire to in all of our Catholic schools. And I wonder, what advice would you give to other school leaders who want to embed that sort of innovation and continuous improvement into their culture?
I think the hardest thing, Frank, just in my time in Catholic education, is school administrators, school leaders are stretched extremely thin. The operational can easily override the strategic. And that is to no fault of the people who are doing the great work in Catholic education. We've structured ourselves in a model, and I know we'll talk about governance models later, but we've structured ourselves in a model where we often haven't given ourselves time to pause and to think and to be able to think strategically. So my advice to any leaders would be, number one, surround yourself with a good team, whether those are volunteer advisory people, whether those are people that you respect within the world of Catholic education that are just happy to give of their time to have conversation with you about things you can do. But to do it, to jump and to look critically at everything that you're doing and ask yourself, how can we do this better? How can we do this differently? And this isn't doing things different just for different sakes, and it is certainly not about just doing the latest and greatest thing in education. It is about looking at your organization, the needs of your school families, and then discerning how can we do this better. And what I have found is when leadership models that, it becomes infectious, and then the faculty want to be part of that. And so I do think it is that when it's committed to, it continues to grow almost by itself. It's fueled by other people's excitement about thinking about what could we do better. And that's where the best ideas come from. They don't come from me. They don't even come from Stephanie, our principal. They come from the conversations we have with people, whether it's our teachers, our families, our students, our stakeholders, our community partners. That's where a lot of these good ideas come from. And so don't think you have to do it by yourself. I think that is probably the biggest advice that I would give somebody, because these jobs as administrators in Catholic education can be overwhelming. And so reach out, talk to other people, put together a group or a team to help you with this process.
That's awesome advice. I want to talk a little bit about process, because in your role at St. Brendan, you led a collaborative process to redefine the school's value proposition, which emerged with the Classical Catholic Academy approach. Can you tell us about the why behind that approach and how you approached it?
Sure. The St. Brendan project was an interesting one. It was actually 3 years in the making before I ever came to IWA. And I think what happened is I think COVID put it on hiatus. But there were conversations being had between parties that were common between the two organizations. And the whole idea of the value proposition is something you hear a lot about in Catholic education. What is your school's value proposition? Why should somebody choose your school versus a school right down the street? And when I started the process at St. Brendan, I will admit I went into it with kind of a preconceived notion of what I thought it would be, which is the worst thing you can do. And over time, I realized what I had thought would be the direction we would head was not at all the direction we would head. And you can't recreate a culture, a school. You have to look at where is that school today and where do we want to go. And so winding up with the classical Catholic approach really was not where the journey started. It is what came out of it after taking a step back and saying, no, what is right for this particular community? What is right for this parish? What is right for this pastor? What is right for these school families? That's what ultimately led us to the classical Catholic approach. So the process, I will admit, I botched early on. And I'm not afraid to admit, I make mistakes. I mean, I think, you know, you have to do things to make mistakes. You have to be willing to make mistakes. It probably cost us several months of thinking we're going to go down this road only to then at some point say, stop, no, we're not. That's not the right road for us to go down. And in the end, there's no doubt in my mind that we came to the right path for St. Brendan.
Just to probe that a little further, was the preordained idea, was it kind of like, let's just turn this into an Incarnate Word West approach? Or where did you think it was headed before you found out where it was truly going?
It wasn't, so to say, an IWA West. It was definitely more, though, of what are some of the best practices that we do at IWA and how can we implement those? And again, what you come to realize is a school develops a culture over time, and schools serve different populations. There's different expectations, and even pastors have different ideas and thoughts about what they want their school community to be and to reflect. And so, yes, it was a little bit of, well, why don't we just take the things we're doing here and do them there? And that's where, you know, a couple months in, you start to realize, like, well, there's a reason we do that here and we don't do that here. And it's not that either school is more or less than the other. It's just a recognition that there are differences. There's a reason that each school, when you walk into it, and you know this because you visit schools all over. And my time at the credit union, I visited hundreds of schools. When you walk in, you can feel there's a culture, there's a sense, there's a climate. And you have to be consistent in what you're doing. Now, that doesn't mean you can't change that culture. That doesn't mean you can't impact it. But you do have to be mindful of it and respect it. And that has to be part of your considerations as you go into it. And as we got into it, we just realized that there was a better path to follow. There was a better discernment process than trying to come in with a preconceived notion of what it's going to be and then really doing the work to uncover what it should look like.
Thank you. Yes, I got to assume that growing the reach of the school, growing the enrollment was certainly a factor in thinking about it. But was there ever a worry that the current families might not be interested? How's the retention been since the move to classical Catholic approach?
That is always a concern when you're talking about changing your model. And we did our homework. You know, we went to St. Jerome in Maryland. We visited many schools that had either always been classical, and of course, you know, I can't overlook the work of the Lyceum, for example, on the east side of Cleveland. They do amazing work. Padre Pio. There are Christian models of classical education, and so I can't overlook those. So the question of whether current families, and beyond that, Frank, it's not just current families, it's also faculty and staff, and that was a huge consideration. And when you visit these schools, they do warn you. They warn you that there are going to be some people who will not be on board with the model, whether it's school families or whether it's faculty and staff. And I still remember standing before the faculty and staff and in the best humor I could saying, okay, so you're all amazing teachers. Everything we've done here to put us where we are, you do great work. Now I want you all to do it very differently. That is a hugely intimidating thing to do for teachers. And I absolutely was concerned. And you know, Juliana Silla, who I worked very close with, she's the principal at St. Brendan. She and I had conversations about the concern about losing faculty. And I am very happy to tell you that not one faculty member left in the year that we transitioned from a traditional curriculum to a classical curriculum. School families is the same. Not one school family left because of the change in the curriculum. Not one. The families, and I think a lot of this, and you were at the opening meetings,
yes.
So much of what we do in education is all about communication, and it's about walking people with you and bringing them along. And what we kind of did behind the scenes is we had a zero year, and before we launched, before we really went public with what we were doing, we implemented some simple changes. We brought Latin in. we started to focus a little bit more on Socratic discussions and Socratic methodology. We started to bring some of the language and verbiage of classical Catholic education into just the space. By the time we were ready to launch, we were able to tell our families, this isn't something scary. We're already doing a lot of this, and here are some of the things we're doing. And I think generally speaking, for Catholic leaders, change management, thinking methodically about walking people with you as opposed to just one day you turn the lights on and you're radically different, I think is a huge part of it to be effective.
That's awesome and a valuable lesson for all of our schools and parishes who are thinking about the Keeping the Faith initiative and where it may be calling them to go. Speaking of that, a major goal of the Keeping the Faith strategic plan is involving parishes in the area who do not have schools, involving them in the Ministry of Catholic Education. Can you tell us about the involvement of other parishes like St. Richard and St. Clarence that are part of the collaboration with St. Brendan?
Sure. And I would be remiss not to mention our partnership with St. John Bosco at Incarnate Word Academy. Mm-hmm. Father Matt, even though we have not formally entered into an MOU, Father Matt has been wonderful. And so I'd be remiss without mentioning him because he does so much for us. With St. Richard and St. Clarence, it's interesting. I will never forget the first time that I met Father Kakuthi at St. Clarence, and we went to lunch, and Father Tom and I, Father Tom Woost, and I took Father Neil to lunch, and we shared with him some of our thoughts and ideas and plans. And Father Kakuthi is a wonderful man. He's a great pastor. I don't think we sold him. I don't think in over that lunch, which I graciously paid for, just hoping that would grease the skids a little bit, baby. It was a wonderful lunch, but I don't think he was sold. And it took time. It took time because, as you know, pastors, your parish, you're kind of an island unto yourself, and you are called to do so many things and so many ministries. And the Ministry of Catholic Education was not at St. Clarence. Mm-hmm. And this idea that I credit you and the Keeping the Faith Initiative group to, of engaging with the parishes without a school and getting parishes to realize these are all of our kids that we're educating, and every parish has a role to play. And I still remember the night that we launched. This was probably a year after the lunch, the initial lunch with Father Neil. And then we went through the MOU process with him, and he was gracious, but I still wasn't sure if he was on board. And the night that we launched, who walks in to the parent meeting but Father Neil Kakuthi? And it was so nice to see. And he has been a vocal advocate for St. Brendan ever since. And so I am extremely grateful to him for that, as I know is Father Tom. And so I cannot emphasize enough the need for that change in paradigm of how we look at Catholic schools, that they are not just the responsibility of the parish at which they're housed. Every parish needs to have a tie to a Catholic school. And I think needs to take pride in that, needs to take pride in the fact that the Ministry of Catholic Education is alive and well. It is a huge – it needs to be a huge priority for us, and that is true if you have a school at your parish or not.
Beautifully said, and that is an important thing to Bishop Mlesik. I know I appreciate you mentioned that Father John and myself and the Keeping the Faith Steering Committee had a lot of ideas on the table. And it started actually when now Archbishop Perez was the Bishop of Cleveland, and we took a little COVID pause there. But Bishop Mlesik has come in and said, this is the most important thing. You know, I think of it sometimes as this plan is 5 years for the next 50, and this is the most important thing. If we view the formation of our young people, the young church, as he likes to say, in our Catholic schools as everybody's responsibility, whether you have a school in your parish or not, on the property of your parish, that is, that every parish get in the game, that's going to be transformational for the long haul. So thank you for leading the way, and he's been the most vocal advocate for that in the diocese, for sure.
Absolutely.
If there are leaders in our audience who are considering a similar discernment process about the value proposition and thinking about how their school serves, what advice or lessons learned would you share with them?
I think similar to the advice earlier, which is do not feel like you have to do this by yourself. Reach out to other people. Don't be afraid to reach out to people who have been through the process. And Frank, I want to be clear. I never hesitate to pick up the phone and call somebody that I've come across in the past to say, hey, I'm looking at this. What are your thoughts? Or would you want to grab lunch or a cup of coffee and just talk? I think within the world of Catholic education, oftentimes there are walls that are put up because we are, let's face it, we are competitors, and we all know that. We don't like to discuss it. We like to be courteous and collegial, but there is a spirit of competition, which is as a former athlete, yeah, I appreciate, and I do have that natural sense of competition. But we do have to be willing to engage in dialogue and to talk to each other about best practices, ways that we can partner together. And so that would be my advice is, you know, number one is if you're thinking about it, do it. Don't just jump in. You know, don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to try something, whether it works or it doesn't work, because you're going to learn something very valuable from going through it. But number two is do not think that you have to do this by yourself. And I will tell you, and my wife would tell you, that is probably one of the things I struggle with the most is I think as a school leader, oftentimes we feel the burden of whether it's a budget issue, whether it's a staffing issue. And I have to remind myself that it is not just on me. You have to use the people around you. No one person can do what we're called to do.
Thank you. I remember when I'd met you, but I first got to know you when you came from O'Leary Catholic to St. Ed's when we were looking at the John Peterson program, right?
Yep.
We just started the scholarship. We were maybe our second or third year as provider, and it was a great example of schools that, sure, we fish in the same pond on the west side occasionally, but there are plenty of students with special needs who deserve Catholic education, so it was awesome to be able to share together.
Absolutely. I would be remiss without saying, to your credit, you had your entire team join us for that meeting, and I remember to this day when I left that meeting, my expression of gratitude to the folks that were with me, that you set aside the time of so many people to help us as we were looking at that as a possibility. And so that's the exact spirit that I think is necessary.
Thanks. Yeah, well,
that's the spirit of this innovation series too.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of not going it alone, you've been consulting, advising with St. Robert Williams School in Euclid. And tell us about your current work there and the school's new governance structure. How does this LLC model differ from traditional Catholic school governance in the diocese?
Sure. So I had the pleasure of working with Father John Better through the Keeping the Faith initiative and actually through the St. Brendan Project. And as that was wrapping up, Father John approached me and said, hey, would you be interested? We're going through some things at our school, and I think that your experience might benefit us. Would you be interested in helping us? And so there's a couple elements to it. You know, number one is focused on academics and looking at, you know, the academics. But I don't have to tell you and anybody listening, that is just one part of it. There are so many issues that affect your academics, you know, your administrative staffing model, for example. You know, if you don't have an administrator that has the time to either do some coaching or analyzing MAP tests, reviewing curriculum, you know, you need to make sure that your staffing model is meeting the needs of what you need from an academic perspective. From a governance perspective, it is a huge shift. And Incarnate Word Academy has had a governing board since the early 2000s. So we have about 25 years experience of having a governing board. And what I mean by that, Frank, is I report to a board of directors. The board of directors works to develop the strategic plan. I serve as what I call the link between the strategic of the board and the operational of the administrative team. And this is a huge paradigm shift. When schools have used boards in the past, they have been advisory boards, and that is vastly different. There, people give their opinions. People come in maybe three times a year. They give some thoughts on a certain area. A governing board has fiduciary responsibility. They're looking at budgets. They have hiring responsibility for the president, and then they are really responsible for working in conjunction with the president to develop the strategic plan. And like I said, in my world as an elementary school president, there are very few other people who do what I do. You know, you have Brian Sinchak, you have Lanny Davis. There are not a lot of presidents of Catholic elementary schools. And so I am a huge proponent of this, and I am happy to help St. Robert William as we walk down this road to transition from your traditional, what was an interparochial model, to become an LLC with a governing board, with a president-principal model, and that is part of what I'm doing with them. I do want to emphasize there, I work through the administrative team. So I work with great folks like Taya Novak and, you know, Kat's over there. I mean, there's so many wonderful people. And, you know, my job is to work through them and to really just help them walk on this journey. But it is what they – what Father John did over there is extremely innovative, and it is, in my opinion, the future direction of Catholic elementary education.
So is Saints Robert and William School still considered a parish school under the structure? How does the structure impact the mission and the day-to-day operations as it relates to the parish?
So it is considered a parish school. It's interparochial. So it is, you know, there are two parishes supporting it. As far as how it impacts the day-to-day mission or operations, the mission is the same, you know, to serve the students of both parishes, to serve the families of both parishes. As is the case at many schools, it's also to serve the needs of the community. And so there is a broader, you know, community in Euclid that are looking for the benefits of Catholic education. While they may not attend either of the parishes, they may or may not be Catholic, they still value and appreciate what St. Robert William School has to offer them. And so I would say that, yes, it is a traditional interparochial model in the fact that it is serving two parishes, but the governance is radically different. Instead of the pastor being at the top, essentially, there is a board of directors, a governing board of directors. You know, the bishop has been supportive of this and understands, I believe, that the future pull on pastors is going to restrict their ability to really be as involved in working with their parish schools as they have been in the past. And so I think that as we look to the future, as has been the case in so many areas, the laity is going to need to step up, and the laity is going to need to take responsibility for things like a governing board and helping to provide strategic direction for schools.
Can you tell us a little more about the new role of a president and the relationship to the board, as well as the pastor and the parish?
Sure. Again, full disclosure, I am a huge proponent of the president-principal model. You know, my experience at Incarnate, when I was at EC, in fact, we migrated to this model, and it was in the traditional diocesan fashion of, okay, first the principal becomes the president slash principal, and then you eventually get to a model where you have a president and a principal. What I have seen at IWA is the value of having one person solely focused on the academic you know, aspect of the school, so teacher development, curriculum, all of the things that an educational leader should be doing. Let somebody else, i.e. the president, worry about the advancement, the capital improvements, the finances, the budgeting, even the admission side, other than looking at records as they come in and approving, but the idea of the role of that. When you can split those two responsibilities, you have somebody who has a background in the one being able to focus on the other, and somebody who has a passion for the academic side focusing on that. And I think that that is essential. So the role of the president within St. Robert William is going to be very similar. He is to look at those business operations. And then, as I mentioned before, it is to focus on the strategic. Let the principal focus on the operational. Let them worry about the day-to-day operations. One of the nice things about being president, full disclosure, is I never worry about if there's a sub in the building. You know, I don't get the call at 6:30 in the morning that says, now, I have been asked to step into sub, but that is an operational issue that the principal is responsible for. And so when you can separate those two, it really allows the organization to make sure it's keeping its eye on the ball from a strategic perspective and an operational perspective. And again, I would contend that for the future of Catholic education, you need to do both. Now, the relationship with the pastor, you're right, the dynamic changes. However, from a sacramental standpoint, from a spiritual development standpoint, in my opinion, it allows the pastor to do what a pastor does best, which is the faith. It is the sacramental. It is that side of it, as opposed to worrying about teacher contracts, as opposed to worrying about auxiliary funds. You know, other people can do those things, but a layperson cannot do this, cannot perform the sacraments, you know, cannot, lead mass. And so I think it really does allow the pastor to focus on the pastoral side and leave the administrative, you know, issues to the laity.
That's beautifully said. So why might this be an appealing model for pastors to consider in the future?
I think, as I've seen and you've seen, I think anybody listening recognizes pastors are being pulled in so many directions. And, you know, I am so grateful for the pastors and all the work they do. There is simply not enough time in the day for them to be able to continue to do what they've done in the past for Catholic education. In many cases, pastors are handling two parishes. And so we are at a point, we are at a crossroads where the time of the priest or pastor, everything needs to be looked at as far as what they are doing, what are they performing. And we need to remove some of those administrative responsibilities. And in my opinion, this model frees up the pastor to be able to do the things that only a pastor can do. And I hope in the long run, pastors actually appreciate that more, and they're able to focus on the things that they love about about being a pastor. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a role for them in Catholic education. We need our pastors to be very involved, those with a school at their parish or without. But again, we don't need them to be the administrators, and I think that that is something that can be very freeing for a pastor that's looking at this model, is let somebody else worry about that aspect of it. You know, let the pastors focus on the spiritual aspect of the school.
So with the president running the organization and the board supporting, evaluating, hiring and firing the president, it would seem that recruiting and training board members is going to make or break this new form of governance, right? How do you find board members? How do you prepare them to focus on the right priorities in a structure when you're transitioning to a structure like this?
It's a great question, and it's something, Frank, that transcends Catholic schools. Any nonprofit deals with this issue. And as president, I will be the first to admit, if I can find good board people that I like working with, that I think really understand the mission of the school and want to be a part of it, I bear some responsibility in helping to find board members. But current board members, at least at IWA, are the ones that really focus on looking for new people to bring into the board. And so that I think that that is the best model. And so where do we find them? We use a talent-based board. So and this is what I would recommend for most schools, is you need to identify people within your community that can help you that have certain skill sets, whether that's legal, whether that's HR, whether that's marketing, whether that's finance. And a talent-based board is the exact type of board that can provide guidance to a president, that can provide support to a president. And it's not just the president. Obviously, the board works through the president, but the entire school community benefits. And so as far as finding them, there has to be an intentionality. There has got to be a realization that every board member has a set term limit, and part of that board member's responsibility should be thinking about who else do I know who might be able to help the school in whatever capacity they need help with. And then preparing them, that is typically on a board, you'll have a governance subcommittee or a governance committee. And it is, again, very intentional about how you form board members and how you explain to them what the role of the board member is and really the value of being a board member. And, you know, I'll use Incarnate Word Academy as an example. You know, while we look for a talent-based board, what we are looking for most are people who are passionate about wanting to carry on the legacy of the Sisters of the Incarnate Word. That is the most important criteria, is an understanding and appreciation of what came before us and what our responsibility is at this point in time to carry that on. And even our administrative team, that is always our focus. You know, that's how we always start our meetings, is with a prayer that we are provided the guidance to help us carry on the legacy of the Sisters of the Incarnate Word.
Thank you. I'm so grateful you're here with us as an exemplary president. As you mentioned, while high schools have this model commonly in higher education, certainly for a long time, we currently don't have many elementary presidents yet, although we hope to need more in the future. So maybe tell us about your experience. What are some of the hardest things about being a school president that people may not realize, or even tell us maybe some of the rewarding aspects of the role that they may not think about?
Sure. My mentor, when I accepted the position at IWA, I reached out to Carl Ertl, and he was at Walsh at the time. And I always looked to Carl. And when I was at EC, in fact, I hired his son, Tim, to be our athletic director. But I always admired Carl and the work that he did. And so I asked him, you know, right away, I said, you know, can you and I get together and can we just talk about the role? And I asked him, I said, how do you balance? How much is operational? How much is strategic? Because it seems like there's always a foot in both streams. And he explained that he saw it as about a 50-50 split. You have to be present and in the hallways. You have to know your kids. You have to know your teachers. But you also have this world that you live in that they know nothing about. You have to deal with the board. You're looking at the finances. A lot of the challenge of it is balancing those two. I mean, there are days, admittedly, there are days when I'll see one of our sisters that does morning care, and she'll say, I feel like I haven't seen you in a while. And that lets me know I am not present enough. I am not walking around enough, because the day can get away from you really quickly. And you suddenly find yourself, you look up and it's 11:30 and you haven't even walked through the school yet. And so I think one of the hardest things is finding that balance where you are a presence within the school. But I'm very mindful. I really do my best to let Stephanie run the day-to-day operations. But I have to be present. People have to know who I am. I have to be seen. But at the same time, I have to kind of never – you know, you can never show your card. So you can come from a meeting, a budget meeting or something that didn't go well or didn't go what you want. But as soon as you walk out your door and you're walking down the preschool hallway, all that has to be left behind and your focus has to be the kids. And so I think one of the hardest things is just balancing those two. It is that walking the line between the strategic and the operational. As far as the most rewarding, without question, it's just the people that you get to engage in or get to engage with. And so, you know, whether it's the students, whether it's the parents, whether it's the faculty, a school community is unique unto itself. And I think anyone that's worked in Catholic education knows and values and appreciates the community, the broader community. And if I'm being honest, one of the most rewarding things for me has been having the opportunity to walk alongside the sisters. And we are so blessed. We still have 9 sisters that live on the 3rd floor. They serve in different capacities. Some serve us by praying. Some serve us by doing morning care. Some sisters are on the board. But their presence is still there and is still very, very real. And I feel very blessed as far as, you know, something that's a big reward to be a small part of carrying on this legacy that they found. You know, they founded the school in 1935. I serve as the first lay president, and it is extremely humbling to try to fill that role. And it's very rewarding, though, to just be with the sisters. And that, you know, for however long I'm at IWA, it will forever be one of my greatest, perks of the job, if you will, was just getting to spend so much time with people who have dedicated their lives to serving Christ and to the ministry of Catholic education.
Thank you. Yeah, you touched on what I think is a bit of a tension there between the fact that we've got this innovation series. We're trying to think about how do we do things better and continually improve. And yet one of the great values of our historic institutions are the traditions, the things that will never change, that we want to keep unchanging. As somebody who's been a part of schools that emphasize excellence, growth mindset, collaboration, continuous improvement, how do you view then innovation in light of that pull toward tradition? Is there like a certain toolkit or worldview, or how do you maintain innovation while still respecting the traditional?
That is a great question, because obviously traditions have come up over time, and and that gets to your culture, that gets to kind of who you are. And so I think you do have to look at those things that are just non-negotiables. We will always be this. We will always be an Incarnate Word Academy. We will always be a school in the spirit of the Sisters of the Incarnate Word, and it just has to be that way. And there are just certain things that we will always do because we are a school in the spirit of the Sisters. The innovative part, I do think it's a mindset. I don't think there's any toolkit, because there is no one answer that fits all. And so I do think it's a mindset. And what is right for one school is absolutely not necessarily right for the other. And this is where, my rub with some consultants. I think sometimes consultants come in and they want to slap on a solution that is, well, we did this here and it worked, so let's do it here. I think any solution has to be the result of going through a process of discerning what is best for that particular institution. Now, good consultants will do that, and so that's not a knock on consultants, yeah. In mass. But I do find sometimes, people want to apply a boilerplate. They want to apply a template, and sometimes it's a case of, well, just tell me what to do. And there is no right answer. And so every school has to kind of go through this process. And from an innovation standpoint, in one case, it might look like classical Catholic education. In another, it might look like STEAM education. At IWA, people will ask me sometimes, like, are you a classical school? I say, well, we have a classical foundation. We teach Latin. We teach etymology. We use a lot of Socratic discussions. We use what we have termed the DeMattel model, the DeMattel learning model, which is we want to take the best practices from whatever source they may come from. And so I don't think you have to be pigeonholed and just be a STEAM school or just be a classical school. I think there is space for you to take the best practices and to put that together, to develop your own model. And I think that's what every Catholic school educator, leader is called to do, is to say, what would work best here? What should we be focused on? But I will absolutely tell you that what we've done in the past, this gets to the spirit of continuous improvement. You cannot rest on your laurels. You can never be – you're never done. You're always looking to say, what can we do better? Even if you're really good, you need to try to be even better. And so that's – I do think more than anything else, it's a mindset. It's a mindset of just and this is the hard part, and this is what my wife gets mad at me about, is if it's never enough, then you never feel like you've accomplished. And so for any Catholic school leader that is frustrated, that is trying that is in the middle of the process, take a pause, look back at what you have done. Look back at what you have accomplished, and I am blessed to have a wife that will force me to do that sometimes, say, but look at what you because sometimes as leaders, I think we see the things that we haven't done yet that we know we can do, even though other people don't see those things yet, and we put so much pressure on ourselves, and, we feel like, yeah, but we could be better. There is something to be said for also appreciating where you are now, and I think that's something that will help avoid burnout and just that feeling of, it's not a question of you're not good enough. And that's the balance. But it is that spirit of, yeah, but we could do better. Like, and you know, and then always looking at those ways that you can do that.
That is, I recognize that's a tension because these kids deserve the best. Families deserve the best. And so you are always always trying to elevate your game, but it's a good reminder to stop once in a while and appreciate how far you've come.
Yeah.
Well, it's been wonderful to hear your story, and I hope you'll leave us with a look to the future. What inspires you to keep moving forward in Catholic education? What is exciting to you most about the future of Catholic education?
I think it's an exciting time to be in Catholic education. I think, and I mean no disrespect, but I do think Catholic education had a period of time where we had built-in customers. Every parish school had a customer base. It was the parishioners, and that's how parish schools survived. And the unfortunate reality is whether you were a great school, a marginal school, a struggling school, you had that built-in support. That's just how it was. And I think we're at a point where Catholic schools are looking deeply at themselves and saying, you know, what is our value proposition? What is it that makes us unique or different or innovative? And what do we need to do? And so I find that to be very exciting because even within the Diocese of Cleveland, I think there is space for a lot of different models. And you look at a school like Julie Billiard, who so beautifully fulfills a need in Catholic education for students with special needs, does things that no traditional school could ever do because they've built their model on that. You look at classical schools. You look at STEAM schools. There are so many alternatives and so much room for Catholic schools to look and say, what do we want to be? And, you know, how does that serve the families and the community that we serve? And so what excites me most about the future of Catholic schools is we will always have that foundation of forming young people, forming them most importantly spiritually, introducing them to the person of Jesus Christ, teaching them to bring the gospel message to life, what it means to live the gospel, whether they're Catholic or not, whether they're involved in a parish or not, what it means to bring the gospel message to life. And we get to do this and also form them from an academic perspective. And the reason I don't think I will ever go back to the high school level, I love at that 4 to 14-year-old age, we can have – not that we can't at high school. Of course we can. But we are truly forming young people and forming them in the likeness and image of Jesus Christ and hopefully instilling in them a sense of awe and wonder and a love of learning. And we are laying a foundation that will serve them throughout their life. And there's nothing I enjoy more, Frank, than when an alum comes back. We just had an alum stop by today from class of 1964. Just wanted to walk through. But you hear them reflect on their time in elementary school. And you think about it, they're there for 9 years usually, K through 8. And in many cases today, and you might be there 3-year-old preschool, 4-year-old preschool. So you could be there 11 years. And what I repeatedly hear from alum that come back is it all started here. Hmm. Maybe they went on to Ignatius or Ed's or Mag's or Joe's or Pado or Holy Name, some other great high school. Maybe they went there. Maybe they went to the University of Notre Dame. Maybe they went to Harvard. But it is amazing when they come back and they say, these halls, this is where it started. And I think that will always excite me about Catholic education because we have such an opportunity to help form young people. And so, you know, I look forward to seeing the Keeping the Faith initiative, where it leads, what other great things come out of it. But I thank you for all the work that you've done, Father Betters, Bishop Malesic, for his support of the project. And like I said, I am excited to see what else happens in the Diocese of Cleveland.
Thank you. And maybe one of those alums went to Borromeo Seminary, which is the fellow who most frequently sits in the seat you're in right now in the podcast studio, Father Damian Ference.
Yes, he is one of our illustrious alum, and we are happy to claim him as our own.
Definitely.
So, yes.
Definitely. Thank you for taking so much time here today. Thank you for being part of this innovation series, which we hope will continue to share these great practices. Thank you for your leadership of Catholic schools in this diocese, for sharing your time with us today, and especially for sharing this wisdom with our audience, with me and with our audience that is going to continue to learn from it, grow, and lead for the future of Catholic schools in this diocese and beyond.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks. God bless.
Thanks.